Have you heard the birds sing, the trees breathe, and the rain fall? The stories we tell ourselves are what create our reality. Hi, I'm Julia, your host, and you're listening to Terra Stories, the podcast that will awaken your mind to new perspectives, to reconnect to yourself, to nature, and to become an actor of change in tomorrow's world.
So, to me, forest, in that sense, really represents our own mind and the flourishing and the darkness of our own mind and psyche. And it's kind of all tied up together, that you have to move through the branches, you have to move through the thickness to reach a certain destination, to retrieve something, and then come back.
Ruta's upbringing was enriched by her mother's presence and the wisdom of her grandmother, a passionate geologist deeply connected to the natural world and its spiritual essence. When her grandmother faced a grave illness, Ruta found herself pondering, if we were able to present the diagnosis with a different approach, how would people heal? This question ignited her journey into psychology, intertwined with her understanding of biology. As a dedicated researcher, writer, and facilitator of multi-species imagination, Ruta immersed herself in interpreting the human psyche through the lens of nature. Exploring the innate mechanisms of regeneration and embracing co-creation with the natural world, she sought to unravel the mysteries of the psyche and promote healing. What symbolism does the forest hold, and what profound insights does nature offer about ourselves? Join us in this healing journey. Well, hi Ruta. I'm so happy to have you here on Terra Stories. I love our conversations and I can't wait to share this one with you. And if you want to introduce yourself so that the people will learn more about you.
Thank you, Julia, for having me. I'm really glad to be on Terra Stories and to meet your community. My name is Ruta Žemčiūgovaitė. I come from Lithuania. I am based in Berlin. I am a writer, multi-species imagination facilitator. I'm also an artist and a researcher. That's my short introduction.
Yeah. I can't wait to dive more into what you do and just like how you think, because there's so many things that have a link. And which is so passioning, you know. I always like to start our conversations with starting from where it all started, you know, because that shows a lot about who you are. So if you want to maybe explain a bit about how did you grow up, your community, connection to nature, and yeah, what was your childhood like?
That's a very interesting question to ask someone whose first career was in psychology. So my childhood, I grew up in Lithuania. I was born in Lithuania. I lived in Vilnius for 18 years of my life. So I was born into a pretty simple family, I could say, but on the surface. But yes, my mother was very much a spirituality leaning person and my father wasn't. He was much more down to earth. Yes, so in the long run, they went through a divorce when I was six. So I kind of primarily grew up with my mom and my grandmothers. And so my mom, early in my childhood, got very much into alternative spirituality, astrology, and kind of all that kind of stuff. So from the very early on, I was exposed to a lot of mindfulness practices, yoga, spirituality of different schools of thought, Eckhart Tolle, all this kind of openness of mind. So in a way, I felt that I was, you know, a kid of a weird mom, but it also opened up my mind quite a lot, quite early on. So yes, and kind of the bigger context was that in Lithuania at that time, yeah, the country was kind of recovering from the post-Soviet era. And as a child, you don't really know that. So you take everything, it's normal, everything is happening as it should. And kind of perhaps my bigger connection with nature came from my maternal grandmother, who was a geologist for 40 years of her life. So she worked in Lithuanian geology survey. And she was actually the person who was scouting for oil. Now that I understand, you know, what it means in this day and age, earlier on as a kid, as a teenager, I didn't really understand what it meant, as well as not only oil, but useful minerals, useful materials in Lithuania. So she was making maps. She was drawing maps of useful materials in Lithuania. She was going to expeditions in, at that time, Soviet Union. She almost died multiple times because of those expeditions. One of those times was, yeah, they in the mountains in around Siberia, or now I forget where, but kind of Asia, bordering Asia between Russia. Yeah, they had a landslide, and for 5 days they were in the downslide, and they were just receiving food with helicopter. It wasn't even food, it was this halva, which is the sunflower, pressed, crushed sunflowers with sugar. So for the rest of her life, she couldn't eat that anymore. So there are a lot of stories from her life of this kind of adventurous spirit. She also jumped out of the plane with a parachute, all that stuff. So
you can write a book, yeah, about your grandma.
And she was also the person who was encouraging me to be interested in things like math, and I was playing computer in her office. So that was all great. And she was also like a big nature lover. So we would go, you know, I was staying, you know, at her place during summers because my mom was working, and we would go to a shop and we would pass by these big, big birches, and we would just stand by them and hug them. So that was kind of the tree hugging grandma experience I had.
This is so beautiful. And I feel like it really shows who you are and who I feel you are through your reflections and writing, because, and you said it at the start, you said we looked like a let's say a peaceful family on the surface, you know? And I feel like what you're doing, and maybe it's what also your grandmother taught you, it's going down this surface and learning, you know, more in depth what is happening, you know, and wanting to understand, like, okay, I see the nature as it is, or I see this person as it is, but what is beneath the surface? And I really feel like it's your method of reflection. If you want to explain a bit, how did you evolve in this woman that wanted to learn more about psychology and make it her work?
So this is an interesting question, because following the trail of my grandmother, she actually had a cancer. And She was pretty young, 60, early 60s, basically. And I just remember being 12 years old, going from school and just thinking, wow, if doctors were able to kind of present the diagnosis with a very different approach, how would people heal? Like, I had that thought that maybe the way we introduce certain pathology or dysfunction or illness or chronic illness can actually change the way we look at it and change the way we heal. I didn't have that particular revelation like this, as I'm saying now, but I really was convinced that it's how we talk about it and it's how we look at it. And till today, I'm convinced. So then I really became interested in biology, in medicine, and also in psychology. So in the high school final years, I was thinking between choosing between biology or psychology. I really loved both. But I felt like with my own nature, my own kind of very retrospective nature as a teenager, I chose psychology, which also had an element of biology. So to me, that was perfect. And then I applied to university in Scotland, or a couple of universities in Scotland, and I got in. And I moved countries and studied in Scotland for 4 years, there also for 2 more years, so 6 years in total.
This is so beautiful, and that's so funny because I'm experiencing what you're just saying, because I injured my foot. And we were telling this with a friend of mine that also injured her foot. There's worse, of course, but I really can like experience what you're saying, because how doctors and medicine is treating, like, can be an injury, it can be a sickness, you know, like just a word, just a sentence, just how they explain it, it can really shift your way of, as you were saying, seeing it and give you hope and understand, like, where does that come from? Why do I have this? How can I do to? And it's also like what I read in your article, trying to understand that we are not always the problem and not seeing the sickness as, oh, I'm sick, you know, but seeing it in a different lens. But yeah, this is a small aparte. It's not the subject, but it's so passionate, and it's beautiful that you, as a teenager, already like thought about this, you know, always going like beneath the surface, like, there's something to explore this, you know, that no one thought about and that can change people's lives, you know. So then how did you tie this psychology side to like your work, like what you're doing now, and linking it to your writing, to nature, for example, to also your working as a regenerative creator, let's say designer? How did you tie this all together?
So I thought that, you know, I put psychology behind a little bit when I moved to Berlin. In Berlin, I refocused my career actually towards technology and humane technology first. So for me, it was always about trying to create a bigger impact with my work in a way that in psychology, I felt that I could only reach a certain amount of people. If I'm working one-on-one, if I'm working in sessions with people, it felt rewarding, but at the same time, it felt a bit limiting. So that's why I decided to refocus towards working at first with technology and thinking how that work can influence so many people, because everyone has a phone in their hands. So if we change what is happening also in attention economy and how much we're kind of driven away from our attention and purpose through distraction. That felt very much like in alignment work. Doing this for a couple of years felt like, again, I'm in a certain loop, which was more of a, it felt like I'm doing a good thing, but personally, I'm not being fulfilled and something is missing. So in that kind of transition time, I was still working in tech, and I somehow became very much interested in mushrooms and mycelium. And that was, for me, the entry point into this whole world of regeneration. And kind of at the same time, I met my partner at the, you know, of, mm-hmm. of now. that was yeah. in 2021, end of October. And so these kind of things developed in parallel, our relationship, and at the same time, learning about regeneration. Niels, my partner, introduced me so much to regeneration. So I was learning how to build with mushrooms. So with this citizen lab based in Berlin.
Yeah, can you explain a bit? Because you told me, I love like how you just found this lab, and just like all the discovering of this is so interesting. If you want to explain a bit more.
It's incredible because I've never seen anything like this before. So this association, Top Lab, is founded by several people, and it is kind of a place where interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary, multidisciplinary artists come and explore, you know, intersections of biology, technology, anthropology, different aspects of culture are being explored there and encouraged. And within Top Lab, there is a community now that has formed called Mycohackers. And the initiating person is Alessandro Volpato. He still is my mentor in mushrooms. And I had a couple of people also helping in my path in terms of kind of going to different labs. There's one another lab in outside of Berlin, but this one primarily, it had moved locations within this time, so now it has much more space. But basically, it's south of Berlin right now, and if anyone is listening from Berlin, is south of Tempelhof field, and it's in this kind of industrial location, kind of in the middle of nowhere. You would never go there if you had no reason to go there. So it really feels like you really need to go there if you want to go there. And the only reason is mushrooms and the community.
It's a good one. It's a good reason.
Yeah, it's a good reason. But I find it still hard because we have moved to a very different side of Berlin. So it takes me over an hour, like hour and a half to get there, or if not two. So anyway, yeah. And so the downstairs lab has a big space, like it's a big basement, and it does feel like you're stepping into a movie set of some DIY makeshift lab that you don't know what's happening there, but some species live there, and so that's where
that are co-creating with you.
Yeah.
No, it's beautiful. I love this part of your story. And maybe before diving more into your work with mycelium and, yeah, all the things that come after, maybe can you explain to the people that don't really know what is for you a generative, like, creation design? What is this word, and for you, where does that come from?
Regeneration, regenerative design.
Yeah.
So personally, to me, regeneration is something that is very much at the basis of all life. And this is the quality that looks at life as force that reinvents itself. And we're looking at life and death cycle in one. And for regeneration to happen, there needs, it's implied that if we're speaking of regeneration within the word, we're implying that something has died. And so we're always working with that cycle of life and death. And at the same time, we're working with place. We're working with living systems. We're working with more than human actors and stakeholders. We're working with humans, not as singular beings, but as beings embedded in different ecologies. So when we're talking about regenerative design, we're looking at all of those aspects, and especially the life-affirming aspects, the respect and reverence aspects towards life. So I see regenerative design as a healing design, really, because in our design practices throughout our history, we've seen how design has been deeply extractive, colonial, patriarchal, how design has led to mass destruction and has not been life affirmative. And a lot of times design is also, there's a duality. We're now talking through technology that is very well designed, but we also know where all the materials are coming from. If we dare to know the crystals, the minerals that are used for this technology, that are not designed, that are extracted in the most degenerative ways, right? So we're always working with that balance. So sorry for my diversion, but I'm feeling called to bring in deep context of design.
No, it's so beautiful. Before the podcast, I told Ruta that I loved her, reading her, and I could just, it feels like it's an audio from you reading some of your articles. So I could hear you saying this for hours. So no worries about me. I love how when you talk about regeneration and how you explain nature doing this and how you tie it to our nature also as human, you know. And it comes to what I would like to talk with you about, your art project you did in co-creation with a mycelium. If you want to explain it, and also like how do you tie it to ourselves, humans, you know?
That's a great question. So my mycelium project is called Refusal to Heal, and I am building a humanoid structure, a humanoid kind of body, human size, from mycelium. And I am doing it as, it's an experiment really for me to understand how mycelium grows, to invite a different life form to co-create an art project, to submit myself into unknown, because when you're working with fungi and mycelium, it's going to be slow, it's going to be unexpected, especially when you're starting off, when you're working with materials that you're not familiar with, when you're designing structures that could be seen as architectural or designy or artsy or something in between. You're kind of speculating with your design. So I am primarily using hemp that is produced in Germany locally from local farmers. And I'm using a wire, like a metal coated wire, that I put the hemp strands over wire and then grow mycelium there. So I can go through a little bit just to follow the technical side, and then I'll go into the theoretical side. So basically, mycelium is fungi, is the biggest part of actually a fungi, and only what we see is the fruiting bodies, as we know, above the ground. And so mycelium can really take so many different forms and shapes. And this is the most beautiful aspect to me about mycelium, that it is a shapeshifter. It is an underground architect, underground landscape sculptor. And so I work with that knowledge of these species. And whatever shape I create, mycelium will go there and will incarnate that shape, but also in a way that it wants. So there will be gaps, there will be unfilled spaces. And when I come back to see what this part of the sculpture looks like, because I'm building it in a modular way, I'm always surprised. So that's for that. And the story behind Refusal to Heal is, you know, what we were talking before the recording. I'm very much interested in what it means to heal in a society that is sick. And I'm interested what it means to refuse to heal in the society that is sick, and what it means for the system. And so, in my opinion, when we encounter something like a chronic illness, like an unexplainable illness, or perhaps the body has suffered the injury and is not recovering well, or something is happening to us on a mental, in a mental realm that we can't really explain and heal either, this is the place where that very deep generative invitation is happening. So refusal to heal is not the end of our life as we know. It's an invitation into a different kind of life. It's an invitation into changing what is around me, within the system around me, and recognizing the systems that are perhaps making me sick. And they don't have to be systems that are large. It might be work relationships. It can be close relationships with family or partners or friends. It can be a relationship with yourself that is not working anymore. So refusal to heal is actually an invitation to re-establish what is good for you and what is not good for you anymore. And so mycelium and this sculpture is like a mediator, is working as that alienated part of ourselves that we have rejected, that we have denied and disowned, and that alien-esque shape and feeling that you get when you're looking at the sculpture is meeting of that part of ourselves that is rejecting and refusing to heal. So from the underground, we're kind of, if we're externalizing mycelium, because mycelium primarily lives underground. And when we're doing any work with mycelium overground, it's really peculiar because we're taking this being that belongs underground and we're excavating it above the ground, and we work with it above the ground. And so in this way, I'm curious, you know, with the parallel of taking something that's beneath the surface, externalizing it. So the parallel is between underground and our unconscious, the unknown space, the space where you don't know what you don't know. And once you know, that awareness can change your life.
This is so beautiful. This is so inspiring. I had the same feeling when I read this article you wrote about it. And, you know, it's the kind of reading, as I told you, that really like triggers something in you, you know, and you're like, oh, I know. Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. And to tie it up to forest, as it's the main subject of this season, I'm very interested in also knowing more about what you think and what is a forest for you. And as we know, when we think about mushrooms, fungi, myceliums, we think of forests, you know, because we know and that forests are, as an ecosystem, is very intelligent and really powerful. And we know also that myceliums are part of this intelligence, because even if we don't see them, always they're under and they help trees communicate with each other. So I don't know if you want to explain what it is, like with your words and with your thoughts and your experience, what is a forest for you? Do you go sometimes in forest to, I don't know, learn about mushroom, mycelium? Like, yeah, very interested about your answer.
Yeah, so forest for me is almost like an analogy to consciousness. I heard this one podcast on Emerald Podcast about the forest, how this host of this podcast draws, you know, a parallel between consciousness and forest. And that really intrigued me. I've never heard that before. How in our mythologies, in our tales, in our folklore, a lot of times forest is this liminal, transitional, and transformatory space where a character goes into the forest and has to find something there, or has to go through the forest to reach the other town, or has to find a hut of an old witch. So to me, forest in that sense really represents our own mind and the flourishing and the darkness of our own mind and psyche. And it's kind of all tied up together, that you have to move through the branches, you have to move through the thickness to reach a certain destination, to retrieve something, and then come back. A lot of times in our mythology, we don't remain in the forest. We move through it in and out. Some characters remain there or are held captive there. And some manage to come back home with newly found treasures, like Vasilisa in the myth, right?
Yeah, I read that you used this myth in your last article. If you want to maybe talk about it, I love it. I really love it.
I really recommend reading a long version, or even more, to listen to Clarissa Pinkola Estes.
Yeah. I love that book.
How she tells that story, because that is really phenomenal. From Women Who Run With the Wolves, and she also has the audiobook of the same stories told live. So really recommend checking it out on as an audiobook.
Oh, I have to.
It's worth everything. Yeah. Yeah, but so the story goes like this, that Vasilisa, this young girl, has, you know, her mother dies when she's really young, and the mother passes on this doll to her, this loving, caring mother, and says, this is, you know, my child, this is your heritage, and keep this doll with you, and it will guide your path. And so Vasilisa is very devastated, and her father marries this terrible, terrible stepmother with her two stepdaughters. And so Vasilisa's life becomes really hard, really, really hard. And she's really hated by those stepmothers and stepmother and stepsisters. And one day, fire runs out in their house. And the stepmother asks Vasilisa to go into the forest to Baba Yaga's house and to retrieve the fire from her house. And so Baba Yaga is this old hag, this old witch in Slavic mythology that is known to be
scary.
Like a really scary, scary force of nature. And so, of course, Vasilisa says, of course I'll do it. Because she's been doing everything for them. She's been a very good stepdaughter. And so she goes through the forest. And the most interesting thing is that the doll that her mother gave her is leading her through the forest and is telling her, you have to take this exit, not exit, but take left, and now step forward and take right. So she is listening to that doll and carrying through into the forest until she finds Baba Yaga's house. And yeah, basically, Vasilisa, you know, asks Baba Yaga for the fire, and she's just, of course, she's not just going to give it to her. So she puts Vasilisa through all these trials and tribulations. And, you know, in the end, Vasilisa is able to complete all of the tasks that Baba Yaga asks her only because of that doll. And the doll, every time she says, you know, Vasilisa, you go to sleep. You'll find it's just, don't worry. And as Vasilisa wakes up in the morning, she finds all those tasks resolved. And every single task also has its own meaning and symbolism. So, yes, and in the end, she gets the fire from Baba Yaga. And Baba Yaga, you know, she asks, you know, where did you get this way of this dexterity, like, how did you complete all these tasks? And she said, well, my mom gave me this blessing within this doll. And Baba Yaga freaked out and said, we don't need any blessings in this house. Take your fire and go. And she puts the fire in a skull and mounts it on a stick. And Vasilisa is walking back through that forest with that burning fire in the skull. And the skull is shining light and illuminating the whole forest. And when Vasilisa is, you know, almost home, she is exhausted from that fire in that skull. She almost wants to drop it and run away, but her doll says, no, just continue. And when she comes back home, the skull just pierce through her stepmother and stepsisters and completely burns them down to the ground. And so Vasilisa is freed from their dominion. In this folktale, there's so many elements of what happens within the psyche and what happens within our minds when we descend into the forest and when we go look for that fire, and what happens when we meet that force within ourselves that asks us for a certain kind of a dexterity and discipline and vigilance. And so I'm really, really curious to expand my understanding of forest through that lens. So when I go to forest, I am allowing that more mystical time to unravel, because I don't know the beings that I'm going to meet there. And sometimes when I walk outside of my house, we have fields and mixed forests. So sometimes you see, you know, a deer by the end of the field, just almost jumping into the forest, or other lively animals. And to me, forest is a place for almost a mystical experience, because I don't know what is happening there, even with the most scientific knowledge that we know now, of course, and the fungi working and the trees are connecting. But when you hear in nighttime, you're walking through the forest and you hear an owl hoot, the way your mind sharpens and the way you incarnate into your body to such precise presence, there's nothing like that. So forest to me is that kind of a place, you know?
Yeah, this is so beautiful. And also you're saying, first, thank you for telling that story. And also, you were saying you don't know which living being you're going to meet in the forest, but also you don't know which part of you you're going to meet in the forest, you know, because you're learning also, as those folk tales are telling us. Who are you? Are you going to evolve? What is going to happen to you? And I'm curious also to know if you could give an advice to the listeners on how could they reestablish a connection with the forest? How can they draw inspiration from it? What would you say? Also, nature doesn't have to be forest.
My first instinct would be go by yourself. Go alone. Maybe go without a purpose. And really try to go alone. Because as much as I love my friends, it's deeply distractive. Especially when people just talk and talk and talk. And I'm an introvert and I want my nature moment. So I would say that, because you will start noticing how things are talking to you. And maybe the invitation is to actually notice how the world is trying to speak to you through everything that is happening, through the wind, through the moving branches, through the animals that might come your way, to your thoughts that come up while you're in the forest, to the feelings that come up while you're in the forest. And if your attention is drawn to one particular being, whether it is a mushroom or a tree or a bush or a grass or a leaf, I implore to allow yourself to stay there for a bit longer and tune into the energy of that being and start seeing as it's not a thing, it's a living being. And what is it trying to tell you, if it is? Yeah, I think that's a good start.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And, you know, like, as you were saying, just seeing plants and, as you say, mushrooms or whatever other living being as a living being. And sometimes we are like, yeah, I know it's living. But when you really shift this thing in your mind and you're really like it's living, even if that doesn't move as a bird moves, or it's living, you know. And also, as you're saying, it's a beautiful start.
I'll tell you that every place, every forest, every field has its own energetic signature, the way it feels. You will feel very different in very different forests, and not just because they look different or they are in different place, but because of the rich, 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 beyond human mind, comprehensive time lineage that forest has seen and experienced.
Yeah, I read a book, and she's saying that she goes into many forests, and sometimes she doesn't feel good in a forest. Sometimes she feels so good in a forest, and she's really saying what you're saying. Like, there's an energy, there's something happening that we cannot describe with our five senses, let's say, but it's there, and we can try to develop this other way of sensing what is happening in our environment. So, yeah. I try to do it a lot, but I will try to do it even more now that we talked about this. And we come to my last question that I really love. What kind of ancestor would you like to be? And what is the word you envision?
I love this question. I would love to be an ancestor who was brave, who was supportive of the life that my kin will grow up in, that took time and effort to decondition myself from cultural, societal, familial trauma and programming, and continued bringing even a glimmer of light into this world in the best way I could. And yeah, the ancestor that lived her life in a way that benefited that greater good and healing of the world. Yeah, and so this is a really beautiful question, and I will be thinking about it.
Yeah, but I feel like you're already, what you were saying, I felt like you're already in that path. I don't know you personally, but from what I read and as I see your work, I really feel like you're taking that path. So, yeah, I can't wait to see the thing that are coming up in the future. And I can't wait to read more. Please write more.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ruta. If you want to say something, tell the people who are listening to us where they can find you and find your work, for example.
Yeah, so if... Thank you, Julia. This has been really phenomenal. I really loved our conversation. And as I said, love your project, Terra Stories, and the energy that you're bringing in and opening up space for these conversations. Really, really grateful for that. And if any of your listeners want to connect, I'm really happy to connect. You can find my writing on Substack. It's called Regenerative Transmissions. So I believe we can link them below. And the project that I'm working on with my partner, it's called Sympoesis Experience and Design Lab. So we'll also make sure to link it below, because it's really hard to spell that word. So you can find more of our work on regeneration, regenerative design, communications and research there, as well as more personal mycelium project too. And if anyone is of your listeners are in Berlin this year. In Berlin, we'll be hosting a series of multi-species imagination workshops, and they will be open for public. So yeah, we just recently got a beautiful grant from Imagination Community Practitioners Fund. So we'll be seeding this work further into Europe and into Berlin and try to do a bit of socializing of these ideas and practices to our wider communities.
Thank you so much, Ruta. The podcast is coming to an end. Thank you so much for listening. You can find Terra Stories on Instagram at terrastories.studio and on LinkedIn. If you liked the episode, talk about it around you, share it with your friends. That's the thing that would give the biggest boost to the podcast. And don't hesitate to write me about the topics or personalities you'd like me to invite or address. I wish you a beautiful day or evening.